today's lesson. Hopefully most of you have that, or at least have one where you can look on. Got four left. Well, as was the case the last Wednesday, Jeff is away again today. I think he's preaching in the Birmingham area, filling in someone there, and so he and his family are gone. Turn over in your Bibles to the book of Ezra, chapter 5. We're going to pick back up now in this chronology of the story of Ezra. After finishing up Haggai and Zechariah, let's remind ourselves where we are in the story. When we began the book, we see the return of exiles from Babylon. And there was a construction that began the first time. An altar was built and sacrifices actually began in chapter 3. And the temple foundations were laid, but the construction ceased. Why did the construction cease the first time? Okay. Right. The enemies of the Jews set forth a letter to the king, and that as a result of that, there was an accusation made, and the king decided, okay, let's stop the work. This is in chapter 4. So the work was stopped. And as we get to the end of chapter 4, verse 24 says, the work on the house of God in Jerusalem ceased, and it was stopped what time? Okay, second year of Darius. And as we begin chapter 5, we see the prophets Haggai and Zechariah prophesying to the Jews. Now, what was the story behind Haggai? What did he try to get the people to do? Everybody's kind of asleep this morning, I guess. Well, he told them to go. Is it time for you to live in panel houses while the temple of the Lord lays desolate? You know, they had made adequate preparations for their own lives, and they had not begun in terms of the temple work. Zechariah's emphasis was also on that, but what was his emphasis more on? A spiritual temple being rebuilt that will ultimately, or has ultimately, been fulfilled through the reign of Christ, right? And we personally make up a living temple as Christians, and a spiritual house in a sense. And we are a part of that today. And that was an emphasis that we saw in Zechariah. It may not have been as evident to them at the time, but in terms of prophecy, we can see, because we have the whole complete story, we can understand that's what he was talking about. So let's begin now in chapter 5. It says the prophets Haggai and Zechariah prophesying to the Jews who were in Judah in the name of God who was over them, Zerubbabel, Jeshua, began to rebuild the house of God, which is in Jerusalem, and the prophets of God were supporting them. Verse 1, I may have just answered it. It says the construction was resumed at one time. I think we just answered that, didn't we? The second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. Who played a major role? Haggai and Zechariah, of course. And, of course, Zerubbabel and Jeshua. So at that time, Tattaniah, the governor of the province beyond the river, this would probably have been the river Euphrates, and Shethar-Bozenai, I guess is the way I would pronounce it, their colleagues comes up, and what question do they ask? Yeah, who told you could start rebuilding this? They were under the rule of who? What kingdom? The Persian kingdom, right? They were under the rule of the Persians. And they were pretty much subject to them, weren't they? And in order for you to undertake a massive structure such as this, or a significant structure such as this, you would have had to have some authority from the government to start that. Is that much different than what we have here? Yeah, we have to have a building permit. Now, this may have been, I don't know if there was a complete parallel in terms of the way they did things versus the way that we do things. But there was some presumption of the fact that you had to have some authority to start building something like that. So they come and they challenge it. And says, you know, who told you you could rebuild this temple? So they said, well, we told them accordingly. What was their response? Let's just go with verse 3, question 3. Hopefully you had a chance to look at the questions. Well, we told them the names of the men who were responsible for the construction of the building. And they thought, well, here's the people that are involved. This person's responsible for this. This person's responsible for that. They're people that had different responsibilities and duties. And was that enough? Right. And that is true, and that is something they're going to refer back to. That'll be part of their argument, as we'll see here in just a moment. You know, we do have authority to do this, and we'll get into that in just a second. What does Ezra say regarding God's role in this? Did they just stop with this particular challenge? Did they just stop and say, okay, we're going to stop again? Yeah, there was a period of time between the time that these people came and made this challenge versus the time that the word actually got to Darius, right? That the letter actually got to them. And during that time, God's eyes were over the work that was being done, and that continued to proceed. Look at verse 5. But the eye of their God was on the elders of the Jews, and they did not stop until a report could come to Darius, and then a written reply be returned concerning it. So they are going to proceed on, and God, through His providence, is allowing this to happen. He is continuing to make things easy from a standpoint of, prosper from a standpoint of being able to continue on with the work. So the enemies, they write a letter. We're going to begin here in verse 6. Did somebody have a chance to summarize the letter? Kind of hard to summarize it with almost without reciting the entire passage. In fact, let's just read that. Coach Murr, would you mind reading verses 6 through 17? It's a little lengthy reading, but it'll summarize exactly what the content of the letter was. It'll be through the end of the chapter. Chapter 5, yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. That was kind of a lengthy reading. I appreciate that. Let's get an idea of why they might have a problem with this. The Persian Empire, I've got some notes here, it says that west of the Euphrates at this time included Syria, Arabia, Egypt, Phoenicia, other provinces that were all subject to Darius. And it says it was divided into 20 provinces called satraps. And we see the reference to that particular term in the book of Esther, if you recall. Syria was one. It included Palestine, Phoenicia, Cyprus. And there would be an annual revenue, a taxation that would be brought about that the main kingdom would receive. And it says that any time that, most of the time the governors of the Jews were appointed by a Persian king. And the Persian king usually would not bother the internal government except when there was a threatened disturbance or order of tranquility. And it could have been that this particular governor, Tatnai, whether it was this may have just been a title rather than a name itself, but it's possible that he had heard about this and people were wondering what was going on over there. And any time another province would be building up something like that, that might be a perceived threat. So when they hear about this going on, they go over and say, "Well, who told you could start rebuilding this temple or finish the construction?" And that would be, that might be something that they have a concern about. I don't know if there's a parallel to that today. Perhaps one country building up an arms or building up armies on one particular border or something like that. But whatever it was about this, there was a concern that they had. Perhaps they perceived it as a threat. So they write this letter. And I think if you look at the content of the letter, the fact that God did allow this to proceed, and they, of course, would have allowed it to proceed, and they send this report, as we've just read, and they say, look at this house that's being built, a house to the great God. That's their idea of how they describe Jehovah God. It's being built with huge stones. I've read that the term there for huge lays reference to the fact that these are the type of stones that were so huge you could not be transported through normal means. They would have had to have been drugged or rolled because of the size of them. And it says also the beams are being laid in walls. This work is going on with great care and it's succeeding in their hands. So we asked, who told you could rebuild this? And they asked, and we said, we wanted the names of the people that were involved. So they said, well, we're the servants of the Most High God. We're rebuilding the temple that was built many years ago, which a great king built and furnished. Who was that great king? Solomon. Solomon is the one who built the initial temple, the first temple. But why did God allow this temple to be, or his temple to be destroyed? Do they understand the reason why? I'm sorry? Yeah, look at verse 12. Because our fathers had provoked the God of heaven to wrath, he gave them into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldeans, who destroyed the temple, and what happened to the people? They were taken captive to Babylon. But in the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, he issued a decree to rebuild this house. And the gold and silver utensils that Nebuchadnezzar, when they raided the temple and destroyed the temple, there were lots of articles of silver and gold that were inside the temple. What did they do with them? Took them back to Babylon. Apparently they had kept them there for a while. Didn't necessarily melt them down, but they're still intact, apparently. And these were given to one whose name was Sheshbazzar, who was the governor at the time. It's interesting to note, and we even see this even when the Roman Empire comes into play later on, that even though these particular provinces or countries were a part of a greater kingdom, there was still an ability to carry out normal things. There was not a huge amount of interference. Yeah, there could have been a jealousy factor involved there. Well, what are they doing? You know, yeah, that could have been come into play as well. So look at what they asked for. Well, it says in Sheshbazzar takes and lays the foundations of the house of God in Jerusalem, and it's under construction, but it hasn't been completed. And look, what did they ask for in verse 17? Yeah, so they understood that there was a decree made by Cyrus. I'll be honest with you, they seemed fairly reasonable. You know, they just didn't attack their enemies. They went to the head of the government, and asked, you know, if it pleases the king, let a search be conducted in the king's treasure house in Babylon. Apparently there was a national archives made there that if a decree was issued by King Cyrus to rebuild the house of Jerusalem, and find out if there was such a decree, and if so, let us know what you think. Let us know what you find out. You know, I think sometimes we think of ancient governments as just being totally disorganized. At least that's in my thought. They could never be as organized and as structured as us, yet it seems like they probably were. There was a national archives that collected the various edicts that were proclaimed. There were things that were written down. And they just had to go search and find them. They didn't have, they apparently didn't have a way of Googling them like we do today, do they? They had to do a physical search. What was particular about the laws of the Medes and the Persians? There was one thing we hear repeated in the Bible concerning their laws. Couldn't be revoked. Once a law was issued or decree was issued, it could not be revoked. And I'm thinking maybe that comes into play here. If King Cyrus had issued a decree saying, they're allowed to rebuild the temple, then that couldn't be revoked. Now, the Bible doesn't make a particular point about that in this context, but we do see it in other contexts. And as we see this story play out, it seems as though once that decree is found, they're going to go forward with it. Any comment as we finish up chapter 5? Yeah, and it does make that point, and that's a good point, Rob, because the fact that you point out that there was a period of time that probably transpired in just going and collecting information in terms of the people who were making the challenge, then they writing their letter, I imagine that took some time to formulate that, right? And then that letter has to be transported to Darius. It probably had to get on his calendar for him to take a look at. Again, I'm making some assumptions here, but just thinking about the way our government works, and we have immediate communication, throughout our country. And this is an ancient time where the means of communication weren't as great. So there would have been a period, I think it's a reasonable assumption, of saying, you know, that probably took a little bit of time for them to get that letter to them, to Darius, and for him to issue a response. And as Rob points out, and the Bible points out early on in the chapter, the eye of God, verse 5, was on them, and they did not stop until a report could come to Darius, and then a written reply returned concerning it. So that work proceeded. And we'll see in a few minutes that wasn't, in terms of years, I don't want to answer the question, but in terms of years, I think it would have been important that they did continue on, given the time that it took. All right, let's begin chapter 6. So Darius gets the letter. He issues a decree saying, let's search the archives where the treasures were stored in Babylon. And it mentions the place where this was, Ecbatana, that's the way I would pronounce it. And there's a fortress there that apparently contains the archives, and they're looking. And what do they find? Yeah, they found a scroll. Back then, they wrote on scrolls, and there was a memorandum, as the New American Standard puts it, that was written on one of those scrolls. And it says, in the first year of King Cyrus, Cyrus the king issued a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem, let the temple, a place where sacrifices are offered, be rebuilt and let its foundations be retained. Its height being 60 cubits, its width 60 cubits, three layers of huge stones, one layer of timbers, and let the cost be paid from what? The king's treasury. So we're actually seeing the Persian government financing the construction. You think God was helping this? Yeah, God's providence was definitely at play here, or in work here. Not at play, but in work. So he searches that decree. They find the scroll. It gives the particulars of the construction. And we have a question here. The dimensions of the new temple, what did we just say they were? 60 wide by 60 high, right? And the foundations were retained. I don't know if that means the foundations had already been laid, right? So they could have taken the foundations that were there and built upon those. But the height and width is 60 by 60. What does that translate to in terms of feet? 90 by 90. There's usually somebody in here that knows the dimensions of this auditorium, but I don't. About 90 by 90? Just think about the size of that. Now, how does that compare with the original temple? Well, there were some similarities. When I look back to 2 Chronicles, let's just turn back to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 3. It was close in some ways. Robbery, verse 3 of 2 Chronicles 3. Read 3 and 4. Now, I'll be honest with you, I didn't have a chance to research this as much as possible. The dimensions in the book of Ezra give the height and width as 90 by 90, which we said was close. A close approximation would be this. The temple, the original temple in 2 Chronicles 3, mentions the length as being 60 and the width being 20. So I don't know if it was exactly the same. It didn't sound like it's exactly the same. Width of 20 would only be 30 feet, right? It wouldn't have been very wide. So this particular, the new construction, would have been fairly wide, or much wider than the old one. Well, for some reason I wrote it as width. Right, yeah, and there is a difference there. So that could be the reason that may be what the difference is. He's just reciting in the fact that the foundations were already laid. But Jeff did ask us some questions about that. He did ask how high had some of the features of of Solomon's temple had been. How high was that porch? 120 cubits, which is how many feet? 1.5 times 180 feet. Pretty tall. Apparently there were some differences. And he asked the question, and we see the reactions of the people earlier on, and we also see it mentioned in Haggai, the second chapter. Could this have been the differences for the reactions that we see? Apparently there was some difference between the original temple and this temple, and the reaction, particularly in Haggai, the second chapter, or is it third chapter, of second chapter, there was a response of sadness on the part of some because they had seen what? They had seen the old temple. How long have they been in captivity? 70 years. So is it reasonable to assume there would be some people still living who had seen the first temple who would also see the construction of the second? Sure. Yet there's no mention of it being covered in gold. The glory of this temple, even though the references of some of their enemies make out like this is a magnificent structure, huge stones, building this great house. You think about that, the fact that some people who saw it were sad because they remembered the first one. So I think the point being made here is, even if the second one is as an impressive structure as it was, it paled in comparison to the first one. You see that point? It just adds to the magnificence of the first one. Solomon's kingdom is long gone, isn't it? And the wealth and the splendor and all the things associated with it, they had it great at the time, but they lost all that because of what? Idolatry, unfaithfulness to God. And there's a big lesson in all of that for us. Even though they were allowed to return, they weren't back to their glory in terms of their physical glory. There were consequences associated with the actions that nation took. Even though they're allowed to be able to come back now, they're coming back and they're going to be restored, they're actually rebuilding the temple, there were still consequences associated with what had happened. Right. I mean, the fame and the splendor associated with that original temple and that original kingdom and how God had blessed them so abundantly, that wasn't done quietly. There were people coming from all around to actually see and be a part of that. It was an impressive thing. So now, here we are, all these years later, and much of that is gone, and I don't think that's going to come back in terms of a physical kingdom from the sense of what it was. All right, let's keep going. What did Cyrus decree regarding the cost of rebuilding the temple? Let's look at his response. We did mention that already. It's going to be financed from the Persian treasury. And it says, let the gold and silver utensils of the house of God that Nebuchadnezzar took, let it be brought back to Babylon and be returned, and you shall put them in the house of God. So these utensils are the things that are going to be, that were once used, are being brought back and going to be used again. What does he say to Tatanai and these other officials? Here's how my Bible puts it. Leave this work of the house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on this site. I issue a decree concerning what you are to do for the elders of Judah in rebuilding the house. The full cost is to be paid to these people from the royal treasury out of the taxes of the provinces beyond the river, and that without delay. Where were these guys from? Thanks for asking. That's the way it sounds, isn't it? You know, they might have regretted asking. You know, not only is it going to be paid for, it's going to be paid out of your taxes. That's the way it reads to me. Again, God's hand is blessing these people. There's no question about that. And when we talked about the book of Zechariah last time, when the response basically was, how long are things going to continue like they are, God? God's response was very favorable. I am going to be with you. Of course, there was a greater fulfillment to that beyond the immediate physical temple. But that was a part of that as well. And we're seeing God's hand at play here, at work here. Not only were they going to finance the construction, what else were they going to give them? Exactly. Whatever is needed, bulls, rams, lambs, a burnt offering for burnt offering of the God of heaven. He had to have some understanding of what this worship was going to involve, didn't he? Because there would be animals that would be required for that. Anointing oil, salt, wine, wheat. Give it to them daily without fail, so they may offer sacrifices to the God of heaven. and pray for the life of the king and his sons. Apparently, he was expecting some benefit out of this. There had to be an understanding of these Persian kings about, we already saw that with Cyrus, but there had to have been an understanding of who God was and what God could do. I think that's implied here at the end of verse 10. And I issue a decree that any man who violates this edict, what's going to be done to him? Take a timber from his own house and hang him on it. The New American Standard says he will be impaled on it. Doesn't sound like a good thing to have happen to you, does it? What about your house, his house? Yeah, made a refuse heap. You know, don't challenge this, is the answer. May the God who has caused his name to dwell there overthrow any king or people who attempts to change it. Whoever tries to destroy this house of God in Jerusalem, I, Darius, have issued this decree. Let it be carried out with all diligence. So, how did Tatanai respond? Speedily, with all diligence. When the person who your livelihood and life depends on issues a decree, what are you probably going to do? I've seen a little bit, not a whole lot, just where I work, people who are in the military, like a colonel or occasionally a general. When those guys issue something that they want done, there are people running to do it, particularly with a general. He doesn't have to say it twice, usually. Yes, sir, that type of thing. And I imagine the importance of this official would be far beyond that. This was the king of the empire. When he issued a decree, he was going to do it. Yeah, we see that in the book of Esther, don't we? What happened to Haman? He was a fairly high-ranking official, wasn't he? And when he met his undoing in terms of with the king there, and of course he lost his life as a result of that. So that's exactly right. These kings were ruthless. And I think sometimes we have a hard time getting into that mindset. And it's a very good point. I've heard that point made before. The ruthlessness of these kings, and they didn't have any great respect for the sanctity of life like we might in our country. It's like we go to great lengths to protect even the guilty sometimes, to make sure that we don't put a punishment on them that's not humane or something like that. That wasn't the case back then. If you run afoul of the king, you were going to meet the consequences. And you did not want to meet the consequences. And Tatanai responds accordingly. So he carries out the decree with all diligence, just as Darius had sent. And it says here in verse 14, the elders of the Jews were successful. Who? Who's still going on? Who's still working here? Haggai and Zechariah. And they finished the building according to the command of God in Israel, according to the decree of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes. And the temple was completed when? The sixth year. So what did we note when we first started the class today about what year the resumption of the construction began? Second year, this is the sixth year, so how many years? 4 years that it took. And I guess that was one thing I was thinking about when Rob made his point about the construction of the temple was allowed to continue on while this thing was being researched. And that probably did take some time, and there was probably a lot of important work that was accomplished while that was being researched. Right? So, sixth year, it's finished. And the sons of Israel, the priests, the Levites, the exiles, they celebrate with a dedication ceremony. I think we have a question about that. What started happening again? Well, the Passover was resumed. There was the resumption of the sacrifices. Yeah. Now, this dedication ceremony, this was a particularly big ceremony, apparently. There was a great celebration. There was joy. It says here they offered for the dedication of this temple 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs as a sin offering. 12 male goats according to the numbers of the tribes of Israel. Now let me ask a question here. In fact, Jeff asked the question. How did that compare to Solomon's dedication ceremony? I've written 22,000 oxen, 120,000 sheep. That is just beyond comprehension. How would they even gather all those animals together back then? And this ceremony here, while it sounds like a lot, was nothing in comparison to the first dedication ceremony, was it? But, be that as it may, it was a time of rejoicing. It was a time of renewal. And it says here in verse 18, they appointed the priests to their divisions and the Levites in their orders for the service of God. What was their... How did they go about doing that? The book of Moses, exactly. They were talking about... there's a reference here to... I wrote down Numbers, the third chapter, Numbers, the eighth chapter. There's also a reference to it in 1 Chronicles, the 24th chapter, when David organized them as well. So, did they just do that out of, just decided, we're going to do this out of any means we think is suitable? No. They referred to the book of Moses. They referred to the law that was already written down. Is there a lesson in that for us? Now, had their circumstances changed considerably? Is this the same temple? They're certainly not following, they certainly don't have a tabernacle anymore. That's long gone. The first temple is gone. They've been in captivity for a long time. Only a remnant of them is left. Could you make an excuse to say, could you make an argument to say, well, we really don't have to go back to the way it was because time has changed, circumstances have changed. Do we really need to go back to the old pattern? You think God expected them to? He absolutely expected them to. Is there a lesson in that for us? Is my question. I think there absolutely is. And people make the points today in religion, well, that was back then. I even had somebody point out to me one time, that was a different God back then. As if God changed. What does it say about God in a day? A day is 1,000 years. God is the same today, tomorrow. God hasn't changed. God still expects people to follow His patterns. God still expects people to do things the way He has instructed. That's why we're trying to be careful here. We are very careful here about the way that we do things in terms of our religious practices. We want to have a pattern in the Bible to show us, here's what we're supposed to be doing. And if we don't, we're doing it without God's authority. And if they had gone out on their own and just decided they were going to do this any old way, they would not have been pleasing to God. Let's finish up real quick. So they observed the Passover. The priests and the Levites purified themselves together. And there was of course, instructions for how to do that. They slaughtered the Passover lamb, celebrating the Passover again. This had to have been a glorious, terrific day in their history. The sons of Israel who returned from exile, all those who had separated themselves from the impurity of the nations of the land to join them, to seek the Lord God of Israel, ate the Passover. They observed the feast of the unleavened bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord had caused them to rejoice and had turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to encourage them in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. Let's try to answer this question here. And we answered verse 12. The Passover was kept. Feast of unleavened bread was kept. There's joy. Who's the king of Assyria? Well, I think from what I have read, there's people out here a lot smarter than me, and Jeff may want to take this up at the start of next class. It is believed by many commentators this was just a reference to the fact that the Persian Empire controlled the former Assyrian Empire, okay? And you could say they were the king, he was the king of Assyria, he was the king over all that land as well. And this would just be a reference again to the Persian king Darius. That's what I found, because some will try to challenge that as a Bible error. And it just that must be the explanation here. Now, Jeff may want to go into that in a little more detail, because that's about as much as I could find. And I didn't have a chance to consult Bob's book. I was trying to do that, but I've got about 10 copies of Go Tell the Good News, but I don't have, for some reason, we don't have. I don't know what happened to our copy of the book that references this particular period of history. Yeah, I believe that it is Darius. It's just a reference to Darius and the fact that he controlled the area of Assyria as well. So, anyway, looks like we've got a crowd waiting to come in. So I appreciate your comments, and Jeff will pick back up, Lord willing, next week.